Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is your Savage Nation. The main topics today are these. The media has forced you to forget the execution of four police in Oakland, California, but I will not. And I will again say that the blood of these cops is on the hands of the very politicians who were sitting on that podium. It got me nauseous, and I'll tell you what really happened. You have not gotten the whole story at all. You do not know why they were killed. I do. The second topic is all the gold in Fort Knox. Where has it gone? Apparently, there's no gold in Fort Knox. How do you like that one? And finally today, why is Fox News beating CNN in the ratings? Do you feel alienated? Do you feel that both parties have left you? Of course you do. That explains the phenomenal growth of the Savage Nation during downtimes. That explains the demise of the newspapers. That explains so many things that you don't read in the newspapers. And now I will explain some things that you don't read or hear anywhere else. What happened to the Oakland cops? How did it happen that one filthy dirtbag subhuman, glorified by the local media, is made the moral equivalent of the four police that he executed? How did this happen? Why were they killed? I will start by telling you what happened to me at the end of the show on Friday. As you know, I had a very emotional day on this program, playing many of the sound bites from the funeral of the four executed officers in Oakland, California. It was largely a national story, not just a local story. And it should be remembered. You'll notice one homosexual was brutalized several years ago, and there have been plays written about him, and the media won't let it go. Four cops are executed in a single day by one filthy dirtbag because of liberal politicians, and they have swept the murders under the rug. The reason I'm focusing on it is I don't want this to ever happen again. And I'm going to tell you more about it as the day wears on, because I think I have the inside story of what actually happened. But let me start with Friday. I got off the air. I was, frankly, revved up, as I haven't been in many years, with rage, with anger, with sadness, and I was alone. And I said to myself, where are my cop friends? Where are they? Why am I alone? Why have I not been invited? The phone rings, a friend of mine calls and says, Michael, there are four cops out from New York, four NYPD, who would like to take you to dinner. And I never go to dinner with people I don't know, never. As much as I would like to sometimes, I just don't do it. I called him back and I said, sure, okay, fine. Well, I said, I'll tell you what, have them meet me at Alioto's on Fisherman's Wharf, because I know it's the best, first of all, the best food around. Secondly, we can get a private room. And so he called Richie Alioto. Richie, of course, gave us the calamari room. And I get there at 8 o'clock. There's three SFPD, four NYPD, an Army colonel up for the Medal of Honor, another Army colonel. And, you know, we started to eat and started to talk. Well, let me finish by saying I proudly have in my hand an NYPD police patch, which I have mounted on the wall. I have an SFPD shirt and cap given to me by the officers who gave me the shirt off their back, veritably. And as we talked, I came to realize what I've always known to be true. It's not just the police who listen to this show. I can tell you by the number of lights that went on the highways when I told you to put your lights on Friday in memory of the four officers executed by the subhuman in Oakland, that this story, my show, represents the majority of America. Forget what the media tells you. Forget what the newspapers would have you believe. It's brainwashing. We are the majority. We actually represent the majority sentiment of America. And so I want to go back now to what really happened to the Oakland cops. Let me summarize it in my own words. I've got several different accounts from people I've talked to, my own sources. Nothing that you have heard so far is the truth. The subhuman did not pop up out of the sunroof, as I had been led to believe. That is not what happened. Because of Mayor Ron Dellums, because of Barbara Boxer, because of Dianne Feinstein, because of Barbara Lee, because of the liberal mental disorder, because of the police watch groups, when the cops caught this dirtbag driving by in his old Buick, and they knew he was wanted not only for parole violation, but also for a rape of a 12-year-old, they signaled for him to pull over. But because the cops of Oakland had been intimidated by the filthy vermin in the ACLU and the politicians I have just mentioned, they approached the subhuman without their guns drawn. That was the end of their life. In an ordinary traffic stop with a noted felon, the cops will come with their guns drawn and prepare to shoot. But because of the very people on that stage, the cops were told not to intimidate the people of Oakland. Don't make the community nervous. Don't make them feel like second-class citizens. So walk up like loving police officers, like peace officers, rather, and ask the gentleman in the Buick if he might give you his driver's license. Well, a gentleman in the car was apparently ready to kill, and kill he did. He shot one immediately in the neck and then chased the other officer down the street as though he were a mad dog. The other officer did not even have time to pull his weapon. He then shot the second officer behind the head like a Nazi, shot him in the back of the neck, and then proceeded to shoot each cop one more time in the head. That's what the media has been glorifying. That's what the filth in the media have been holding up as morally equivalent to the dead officers. Well, let me tell you something. The reason papers are going bankrupt is not solely because advertising has gone to the internet. No, my friends, not at all. In memory of Sergeant Mark Dunnigan, Officer John Heggie, Sergeant Irvin Romans, Sergeant Daniel Sakai. Yeah, in memory of them, we have the show today. Sergeant Mark Dunnigan left three children, ages 15, 13, and 8, and a loving wife. Officer John Heggie, Sergeant Irvin Romans left six children and his wife. Sergeant Daniel Sakai leaves a lovely wife and a 4-year-old daughter. And yet the vermin in the media make the subhuman who killed them the moral equivalent. And you wonder how Obama became president? You wonder why so many millions were brainwashed, hoodwinked, propagandized into believing that Barack Obama was qualified to be the president of the United States of America when he was only a junior senator from some godforsaken Chicago war district put in power by some money changers in the temple of this republic? And that's why we are here today on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is fair game, but I'd rather focus on this for the moment. There's an interesting article on my website by John Lilpop saying California should celebrate March 31 as Dr. Michael Savage Day. What? Me? Yep, that's what he says. He's a fine writer. And here's how he ends his article. He says, why not designate March 31 as Michael Savage Day throughout the length and breadth of our great state? Close the schools, shut down the state and local bureaucracies, and dedicate the entire day to celebrating the birth and life of Dr. Michael Savage. What is that, you say? March 31 is already a state holiday in California to commemorate the birthday of the late Cesar Chavez? Can you imagine? A brilliant author, educator, radio broadcaster, and advocate for America is all but ignored while the entire state shuts down to remember the birthday of a grape picker and union organizer only in California. He then goes on to say that Michael Savage is heard on over 400 stations, reaches 10 million listeners a week, and holds two master's degrees and a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. Savage has authored 24 books, including 4 New York Times bestsellers. Savage is a staunch defender of Americans and America's sovereignty, the rule of law, the preservation of American borders, language, and culture. He says with these credentials to his credit, one would expect California to be rightfully proud of this favorite son. Oh, sure. Which California? There's no California anymore. Get it? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Officers, attend. Present.
We are talking about why the left-wing media has swept the murder of four officers under the rug and why they have equated the life of the subhuman who killed them with the officers on the Savage Nation. Bob in Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Michael. Why is it the liberals' fault that two police officers got caught off guard? If they knew that he had a gun ready, don't you think they would have had their guns out?
No, that's exactly my point, Bob, because they have been browbeaten and intimidated by Mayor Dellums, by the ACLU, by groups such as Police Watch, Cop Watch, created by the good friend of Obama, who is now in the White House. Because of that, they were told to never approach a car in a traffic stop with their guns drawn because it might upset the wonderful folks of East Oakland. And so they could not come with their guns drawn. Don't you understand, Bob?
No, I guess I didn't understand that part, but it does make sense. I mean,
In other words, the liberal politicians have a standing rule to not approach cars with their guns out or their hands on the gun because it may make some of the wonderful folks of East Oakland a little uncomfortable. And it's better that the officers are 6 feet under than that the folks of East Oakland were made uncomfortable. That's why I say the blood of the officers is on the hands of the very people who were sitting on that stage. Thanks for the call. You know, I got to tell you, the night that I had the dinner with the SFPD and the NYPD, it was a great moment for me in Alioto's on Friday night. People kept coming over. You know, it was one of the guys were in uniform. They were all wearing the uniform. And a lot of women came over and said, I hope you don't mind. Can I please take my picture with the men? Not with me, with them. And it was amazing to watch the sentiment of people for police in this country when they're able to express themselves as opposed to being suppressed by the vermin in the media. Kansas City, Sam, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. On Yahoo.com, they had a story about Ryan Motes, who's a black NFL player in Dallas, and he was stopped by Robert Powell, white officer, outside his hospital with his family. And apparently his mother-in-law was about to die, and Yahoo ran this story on the front page, but they never even mentioned the killing of four police officers.
Yahoo is written for Yahoos. Yahoo News is written for potheads and degenerates and orgasmic individuals who are seeking only the next tie or the next piece of clothing. It's not written for a normally intelligent human being. I see the same thing with AOL News. All of these internet sites, those type of sites, excuse me, the Yahoos, the AOLs, write news for the average 12-year-old psychopathic liberal child, thanks for the call. See, I'm making it quick today. I'm making it very quick. Now, the police chief of Oakland, we can't blame him yet, but he's an acting police chief, and most big cities truly have acting police chiefs. They're all acting to be police chiefs, but they're really waiting for their next role, possibly in the government, the federal government itself. We can't yet blame the acting police chief. You know, there's something perplexing to me. I look at the memorial for the slain officers, which I have in my hand, and I see speakers include U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein and Attorney General Edmund G. Brown, Jr. I do not see the name Barbara Boxer. Why did she speak? Why did the Yenta from Brooklyn, the imposter, as the U.S. Senator, the imposter, the faker, the fake senator from Brooklyn, who has fooled Californians now for 20 years. How did that Yenta wind up on the stage? And did you hear what that Yenta said?
Dr. King said that you can never meet violence with violence.
Well, that's why they're dead, schmuck. They didn't have their guns drawn because of idiots like you, Bobby. Because you don't believe in violence. That's why our Marines get killed. That's why our cops get killed. because of liberals like you. San Francisco, KNEW. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage.
Yes. Go ahead, quick.
Dr. Savage, this is Corey from Tracy. I was went out this morning, or a Friday morning, to go to the bank, and I noticed every flag in Tracy was flown at full staff. And it made me absolutely just disgusted. I spent 3 hours going around town making sure every American flag was at half staff. So when they brought the officer home, the family could see the respect in Tracy.
Well, good for you. But you understand the mindset in America today, and the lack of respect for police is beyond comprehension. But thank you for your great service to America and to your community. Chicago, Marilyn, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm just calling to express my condolences for this terrible situation. I'm in my car. I can hardly stand the emotion of this. And I just thank you for taking the time to bring this to our attention and for all your service.
But I'm trying to make sure this doesn't happen again. I cannot let this disappear from the media just because the scum in the media have made it disappear. I'm not going to let it go. They killed these cops.
I mean, I've been right.
Every piece of garbage on a cop watch organization should be thrown off. No more police watch groups. No more community watching groups. Get rid of them. Get rid of all of them. They're all left-wing communist gangsters. Every one of them works for a gang. One way or the other. If they're not for the police, they're for the criminal. If they're not for the police, they're for the drug gangs. If they're not for the police, then they're working for MS-13. Inadvertently, if not directly. Get rid of every police watch group in America. There's no need for them. It's a holdover of the 60s. This cancer has got to stop. That's my opinion. The entire system is broken. And it starts with the police chiefs in the metropolitan districts of this country. Every last one of them is a political appointee who does not represent the police. They represent the mayor. And as you know, every mayor in this country uses the police only when he wants the votes. That's my opinion. We'll move on.
Savage.
There is another big story out there, which is GM becoming OM, Obama Motors. Here is the first time in American history that a president has forced an American manufacturer to, it's a shotgun marriage with Fiat. Now, try to figure this out. He's forcing the head of General Motors out. He's going to give General Motors billions of dollars of your money more. And then he's forcing them to merge with a foreign company entitled Fiat. Now, Fiat was affectionately called the Fiat car. In my day, was known as a fix-it-again Tony. Nobody ever knew drove one. After buying one or driving it, they never got another one. But the Agnelli family owns Fiat. It's an interesting story. Why would Obama force GM to marry Fiat? Now, you've asked yourself who put him in power. Where'd the $900 million come in the last rush of money, the bundled money? Who sent it? Who knows? Who knows who it is? Soros, no doubt, bundled a lot of it. But don't you think that this is possibly payback, bundled money? You know, 2% of Fiat is owned by the Libyans. I don't think you understand that either. There's something deeply suspicious about a president forcing a private corporation to merge with a foreign corporation. Something is really awry. And, of course, the market dropped like a rock today. The market does not like a government meddling in the free market. It's never happened like this before. So if you want to talk about that, go ahead, please. 1-800-449-8255 in San Diego, California. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Savage. How are you?
What's on your mind, please?
Well, sir, I've been in law enforcement over 20 years. I want to tell you what the problem is. The problem is the departments. You mentioned earlier about the chiefs being political hacks. It goes up and down the rank and file. The chiefs put pressure on people who are in charge of the commands. The commands put pressure on the lieutenants, who put pressure on the sergeants, who put pressure on the officers who are doing their job. That's the problem. If they want these officers to go out and do their job, they need to support them, and they don't. That's the problem. In Southern California, most departments, they have what are called third-party complaints. Somebody driving by completely arbitrarily can make up any outlandish accusation against the officer.
Right. So, in other words, if you're a gangbanger, you have a third-party drive-by when the police are stopping one of your gang members and they make a complaint. That's why I said to you, it's time to end these police oversight commissions. They're all fronts for organized crime. Thanks for the call. My opinion. One man's opinion. Pete and San Fran on KNEW, your opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, I have five family members who are police officers, and one of the big problems is that our police force is a paramilitary reactionary force. It's not a proactive force. Also, by the way, I've been listening to you for 14 years, and congratulations. But that's the biggest problem is the cops' hands are tied behind their back because they wait for something to happen and go, oh, how can we clean it up? How can we do the control? And it's too late. The cat's out of the bag at that point.
Yeah, but I'm focusing on the execution of four officers by a subhuman. And my point in contention is that they were killed because of the rules of engagement established by liberals like Mayor Newsom in this city. For example, in your city, you can ask your relatives. When they have a traffic stop, the cops are told not to come with their hands on their guns or with drawn guns. Is that correct or incorrect?
That is correct.
That's why they're dead. That's why the first two were gunned down like rabbits by this subhuman crackhead. And by the way, his sister, who complained she was manhandled by the SWAT team, was hiding the AK-47 for him. Why is she not being given a life sentence? Why is she not being tried instead of talking to some filthy lawyer in Oakland about suing for being manhandled? Look, I have an eagle's eye on this. Nobody is better than me on what went on here. And nobody is better in knowing who caused their deaths than me. Don't expect to have this confirmed by the New York Times tomorrow. Don't expect to have it confirmed by anybody but me. Okay, so we can move on. I want to make this a bigger show. How about GM and Fiat? How about all the gold being missing in Fort Knox? Any comments on that? I'll tell you what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to go to michaelsavage.com, and I'm going to see what stories I put up and my webmeister put up. California should celebrate March 31 as Michael Savage Day. Any comments on that? Our defense secretary, Robert Gates, is saying the United States is not, I repeat, not prepared to respond to North Korea. Can you believe this story? Despite the trillions of dollars that we have given the military-industrial complex, they can't stop a rice-cooking dictator, a rice-pot dictator, from threatening the world and the international community by test-firing a long-range missile. Then what have we given the military-industrial complex trillions of dollars precisely for? So they can fly around in G5s and go to golf courses with the contractors who give them jobs when they retire? How about Wall Street hits the brakes? Fears about the future of the U.S. auto industry made the Dow plunge. Liberal coalition takes shape. That's another big story. I don't even want to get in. Here's a nice one for those of you who want more diversity in America. Here's a nice one for those of you who want more immigrants in America. Iran native copied transferred nuclear software while employed at largest U.S. reactor. See, that's what's so good about diversity, is that it makes the liberals feel good to have it look diverse. And then we wind up with enemies within, something I've warned you about for a very long time now. 1-800-449-8255. Video scandal, Biden's daughter on drugs? Question mark from the New York Post. What? Farms in Berkeley? Blind New York governor to tax success. Raises rates 30%. Is his role model Karl Marx or Groucho Marx? That's from the New York Post. The governor of New York State, instead of cutting expenses, is going to tax anyone who makes a living. From the New York Times, Pelosi's approval ratings have taken a horrible nosedive, according to Rasmussen reports. I'm really shocked by that one. And by the way, if you do want to contribute to the fallen officers, the families, the children who have no fathers, I've linked up their, people have called me, individual checks made out to families are mailed to, and there's a name. Checks can be made out to three different trusts. One officer was not married, so there was no trust fund for the family. And that's why when I said that I gave $20,000 last week, $10,000 on Monday and $10,000 on Friday, I thought it was in the denominations of $2,500 for each of four, but it was given out in $3,300 and divided times three, okay, twice. That's how I did it. And so that's why there's three trust funds, not four, Dunnigan, Romans, and Sakai Family Trust. And it shows you how to make the checks out or who to mail it to. You got to go to michaelsavage.com. There are other topics that we could talk about, and I don't think I'm getting the callers on these other topics, but we can talk about this if you'd like, or we can play some sound for you of our great new world leader who's off to Europe this week. Here's a man who never ran a business in his life. Here's a man who's never met a payroll in his life. Here's a man who doesn't know the first thing about meeting a payroll in his life, a man who's been nothing but a professor, community organizer. Now he's taking over America's largest automobile company and flying off to Europe, and he's going to tell GM how to run a business. By the way, last week there was something funny, and that was Speaker Nancy Pelosi inadvertently calling Rep. Barney Frank Congresswoman. Let's hear clip 24 for comic relief.
I am pleased that because a congresswoman, chairman Barney Frank is
talking. All right, we got it. Thank you. In other words, you finally said something that you really meant. Very good. Then Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva says that the economic crisis in the world was caused by white people with blue eyes in clip 23. This is a screamer. Listen to this.
It is a crisis created and expanded by irrational behavior by white people with blue eyes, who before the crisis thought they knew it all.
I see. So every banker is a white people with a blue eyes? You talk about racism and insanity. This socialist goon, the Brazilian president, says that white people with blue eyes caused the crisis. Well, you know, I remember Aldous Huxley writing in the 50s or the 60s that he didn't know what the future world would look like, but he thought the world might divide between the blue-eyed people and the brown-eyed people. I myself have brown-eyed. I'm glad I'm not blamed for causing the crisis, but I know many blue-eyed people. So far as I know, none of them caused the crisis themselves. And by the way, so far as I know, Bernie Madoff, doesn't he have brown eyes? So you see what happens when you have a racist pig like the president of Brazil making a statement like that. But what do you expect from an uneducated man from the slums who is a socialist? Would you expect anything else? This is the Savage Nation. Any topic is fair game. If you'd like to discuss these topics, this is the only place you can do it. I've talked about these topics, some of them on Friday, the Oakland police, the media vultures, but we haven't really touched on why CNN is declining all of a sudden. And I believe it's because the American people have had enough of the left-wing mania. And I believe that the success of MSNBC, where it moved up from the bottom, is because they have LGBT programming virtually all the time. It's always LGBT programming. Hartford, Connecticut, Cameron, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good day, Dr. Savage. I would like to endorse Michael Savage Day. I don't know if March 31st would be the best one for it, but specifically because of your eagle eye that you have, not only on the California police killings, but also on several other issues where there's an absence of eagle's eyes, specifically the destruction of our country and all of its institutions by the secular progressives and the homosexual mafia, as you call it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I could go into this in great detail, but I really don't want to do it right now. I'm trying to explain to people the genesis of this meltdown, the moral meltdown of America. In other words, how can a crackhead murderer be equated with police? How can Al-Qaeda murderers and terrorists who blow people up in a marketplace be equated with U.S. soldiers? And on and on. Where did this moral equivalence come from? I will explain it to you in great detail. Its genesis is with the homosexual community and their educational arms. They have brainwashed America for over 30 years into believing that all sexualities are equal, that gay is the same as straight, that transsexual is better than your grandmother's sexuality, and that you shouldn't morally judge anyone, and a diversity is grand. And consequently, we wind up in a case where four policemen are gunned down in cold blood by a crackhead, and there's more sympathy for the crackhead in the local newspapers than there are for the cops. This is the sum total and the end of the line for the moral equivalence created by the homosexual community, in my opinion. Does that answer your question? Is that what you were getting at?
Well, I didn't have a question. I'm promoting your observance of this movement like no one else on Earth can do.
Because everybody in the media has been told in no uncertain terms that you do not criticize the gay movement. You never criticize the gay movement. You never notice the gay movement. You never say anything but positive things or you won't last one day in this business. That's well known. It's why I am persona non grata in the media. It is why I am never referred to in the media. It's because even though they know I am right, they dare not cross the purple hand.
Well, that's precisely why you're in a position to do something that needs to be done in this country, and that is you are an author, and you are an outstanding man of words and letters. And if you do not write down your insights into these alliances and the insidiousness of the teaming up of the NAMLA and the GLBT and the GLESN, and you pick an alphabet for it, and there's 17 of these organizations.
But I have been attacked repeatedly by the gay mafia ever since I began in radio. They have been after me. They've hounded me. Most of the so-called journalists who want to interview me are only appealing to them to move up the pogo stick of success the way writers used to move up in Madison Avenue. In order to move up in any sphere of the media, you must get the purple hand to approve of you. So I don't want to even go into this any further. I've done it over and over again. I pointed it out. Most specifically, I pointed it out in Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. Thank you for the call. You know, that's it. That's all there is to it. All I can say to you is watch out for the Goomba in the gumbo. I'll be right back.
The situation at Chrysler is more challenging. It's with deep reluctance, but also a clear-eyed recognition of the facts that we've determined after careful review that Chrysler needs a partner to remain viable.
Well, let's stop right here. It's we have decided? The government is now dictating to companies how to run their business? A community organizer, a socialist who has never met a payroll, is now dictating to Chrysler how to run their business and forcing a shotgun marriage with Fiat. Incidentally, I was mistaken when I said earlier, GM Fiat, it was Chrysler Fiat. I've never heard anything like this in my life. Have you? Have you ever heard of a government meddling like this in private business? Are you not understanding that you're witnessing the government takeover of the economy at every level? Are you not aware yet that you have a socialist dictator running America? As sure as I am Michael Savage sitting here, you're watching the emergence of socialism and a dictatorship. Chicago, George, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Actually, I had a comment. I'm actually immigrant from Romania. We came here about 30 years ago to escape communism. And actually, I'm seeing all this country, great country, going back the same way we basically escaped.
There's more freedom in Russia right now for a business than there is in the United States under Obama. Obama is more of a socialist with regard to business than Putin is. Do you know that a business in China has more freedom than a business does in the United States of America today? Listen to what Obama said. We have decided that Chrysler must merge with Fiat. Listen to it again. Listen to it.
The situation at Chrysler is more challenging. It's with deep reluctance, but also a clear-eyed recognition of the facts that we've determined after careful review that Chrysler needs a partner to remain viable.
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean we've determined? A Saul Alinsky community organizer who has never met a payroll has determined that Chrysler needs a potential partner in a foreign company called Fiat? Of course the stock market tanked. I don't blame it for tanking when you see that a man as unqualified as this is now meddling in the automobile industry. What is tomorrow? Today the autos, tomorrow the newspapers? They'll bail out the newspapers, and then they'll tell the editors what to write. Well, of course, with regard to the newspapers, there's a seamless connection between the Obama administration and the newspapers, so there's no need for them to dictate what the paper should write. That we don't have to even worry about. That's already been done. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. In New York City, WOR, Jimmy, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hello. Earlier in the show, you mentioned Congressman Dellums, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, this Marxist leader of Brazil, Lula da Silva. 1990 or 91, I forget, the communist, Castro's secret police, set up an event at the Jacob Javits Center in New York. It was a pro-Castro event. And at that event, one of my friends got beat up, a human rights worker. They beat the hell out of this poor guy. We had about 20,000 anti-Castro people protesting it. But on the flyers promoting this communist event, listed as endorsers were Congressman Dellums, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, and Lula da Silva, this Marxist leader now of Brazil. So the same
right.
name...
Dellums and Dellums is the mayor of Oakland. He's the reason the cops are dead, in my opinion. And by the way, one of the families requested that he not speak at the funeral, incidentally. You do know that, don't you?
I didn't know that, but that's good.
No, well, by the way, to the socialist communist Dellums' credit, he did not speak. He said he didn't want to make a bad situation worse. At least he has the dignity that Barbara Boxer lacks.
Well,
thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Young decorated North Carolina officer ended shooting rampage. Did you hear about this one? You hear about that one in the nursing home? Oh, you didn't hear about the rehab center? Oh, you didn't hear about the rehab center. Gunman was shooting up a nursing home. Officer Garner was the only one on duty. The clean-cut outdoorsman with a passion for hunting and fishing, trained in the use of guns, raced to the Pine Lake Health and Rehab Center, armed with a .40-caliber Glock pistol. He entered the building to confront Robert Stewart in the hallway. Garner fired his weapon once, hitting Stewart in the chest, even though Garner had already been shot three times in his foot and leg. So here's an example of where violence ended violence. Unlike what the Yenta from Brooklyn told you, that Dr. King said, don't ever meet violence with violence. If we had followed those rules, you'd be a lampshade or a bar of soap. Barbara, you hear this, Barbara? You would have been a bar of soap or a lampshade.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The situation at Chrysler is more challenging. It's with deep reluctance, but also a clear-eyed recognition of the facts that we've determined after careful review that Chrysler needs a partner to remain viable.
So the government is now going to tell you what you need to do to remain viable. That's amazing. Here's a man who's never met a payroll. Never run a business, only been a community organizer and a junior senator who's telling Chrysler how to run their business and that they should merge with a foreign corporation called Fiat. The executive who brought down AIG is another story. Joseph Cassano made more than $300 million at the insurance firm. He virtually bankrupted, according to Anna Schechter, Brian Ross, and Justin Rood of ABC News. The FBI and federal prosecutors are reportedly closing in on the AIG executive whose suspect investments cost the insurance giant hundreds of billions of dollars. The government is investigating whether or not 54-year-old Brooklyn native Joseph Cassano committed criminal fraud in virtually bankrupting AIG. Now, we do not know if Joseph Cassano has blue eyes or brown eyes, but we do know the following. Cassano keeps a low profile in London. He almost single-handedly is responsible for bringing AIG down, and by reference, the economy of this country, said Rep. Jackie Spia, D. California. Well, what she says, I take with a grain of salt. But Cassano lives in London. He made more than $300 million running the infamous financial products division of AIG, where he, with about a dozen others, committed AIG to insure what turned out to be more than $1 trillion worth of junk quality loans held by banks. When approached by ABC News outside of his London home, Cassano said he did not want to talk about the allegations against him. Cassano received $1 million a month, even after he was fired from AIG. You ask how this goes on? Well, listen to the rest of the story. After the huge losses became known, Cassano was fired from AIG in early 08, but he still received a salary of $1 million a month until Congress intervened. AIG has received about $180 billion in bailout funds so far. AIG was insuring junk, and it was the AIG insurance that made the junk marketable, said tax law expert Jack Blum. American taxpayers have been put on the hook for this insurance junk. Even as the bad loans began to emerge, Cassano boasted to Wall Street analysts that his transactions called credit default swaps were foolproof. He said on an AIG investor conference call in August of 07 the following, quote, "It is hard for us, and without being flippant, to even see a scenario within any kind of realm of reason that would see us losing $1 in any of those transactions," close quote. I heard the same kind of rhetoric from guys who ran boiler rooms in the 60s. That's an editorial by me. So there it is. The executive who brought down AIG made more than $300 million at the insurance firm he virtually bankrupted. And we learned that the FBI and federal prosecutors are reportedly closing in on the AIG executive whose investments did this. You and I both know that it'll go nowhere. You and I both know that if this guy serves 1 second in jail or gives up 1 cent, it will be as close to the second coming of you-know-who. And we do not know whether he has blue eyes or brown eyes. But we do know that the socialist peasant who runs Brazil believes that it's people with blue eyes who bankrupted the world. Let's hear him again, boys. Let's hear the blue eyes, brown eyes.
It is a crisis created and expanded by irrational behavior by white people with blue eyes who, before the crisis, thought they knew it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I know, Cassano, I don't know whether he has blue eyes or brown eyes. I don't know whether Bernie Madoff has blue eyes. I suspect he has brown eyes. I think there's quite a few brown-eyed people who were involved as well, something tells me. But don't tell that to the psycho from Brazil. New York City, WOR, Chris, on the Chrysler-Fiat marriage, the shotgun marriage. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mike. This all sounds like just a scam by the Obama administration to launder money to the Italian mafia by merging
what?
Chrysler.
Whoa, wait a minute. How do you figure that one out?
Because that's the whole game. The whole game of all these crooks is laundering huge sums of money. So, I mean, I'm sure.
What do you mean? Well, he's going to take. Wait, let's back up here. Obama has no knowledge of finance, that we know. He's an ignoramus when it comes to business. The man says that he inherited $1 trillion of debt from George Bush, which is true, and his solution is not to tighten the belt of the government, but to expand that to $3 trillion. So he's a lunatic. He's a fiscally insane man, Obama. He knows nothing about finance. But what does that have to do with organized crime?
Well, I mean, these basically all these special interest groups basically end up, you know, they're in the hands of organized criminals. I mean, the MS-13 gangs. And
Wait. Now you're jumping on. I have to move on here because now you're sounding like you know less about finance than Obama does. I'm going to have to say thank you, but no cigar. All I can say is watch out for the Goomba in the gumbo. That's my main point today. San Francisco, KNEW. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Down with that flu or cold. I don't think it's the flu because I'm not throwing up. But
hello? Wait. What did you just say?
I know. I got it.
What did you just say? Are you on the radio? Who are you talking to? I can't believe the kind of call screening I have. My call screening is so superb that they're actually calling up yentas at home who are talking about a cold or a flu on another's phone, and they're putting them on my phone live. This is really getting better. You know, this is actually becoming a more fun show. Why don't you call a mental hospital and see if you can get somebody on the show now? Unbelievable to me. Chicago, Anthony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, the same enemy within that's destroying this nation is the enemy within that's destroying the Democratic Party. It's evident with the bumper stickers coming off and the signs coming down. The Democratic Party is finished.
Well, what do you mean Democrat Party is finished? I know that Harry Reid told the Obama supporters to leave the Democrat Party alone with their demands of the moderates in the Dem Party. Even Harry Reid, who is a realist, I may not like his politics, but the man is a realist. Even he understands the crazies who elected Obama are now trying to take over the entire party in the country.
Well, I think that any individual who has any kind of sense can see through this rhetoric. And I think when you hear Brazilian, the president of Brazil making comments that associate that with, that can be associated with Barack Obama, when you have all these massive bailouts.
Oh, you mean trying to turn the brown skin and the black skin people against the white skin people of the world?
Exactly. And you yourself stated that they were trying to turn this into a class warfare.
Well, that's the ultimate objective of the Marxists, isn't it, which is to have an economic war and a class war. And they've been working on it for a very long time, even before 1917, when they had their first big victory in Russia. There's no question in my mind that they'd like to see the brown-skinned people and the black-skinned people go on a rampage throughout the world and try to take the world away from the white-skinned people. There's no question they'd like to promote that kind of revolution. But let's not even go there. Let's not dwell on that horrendous thought, and people are going to say that I'm fomenting this madness. Well, I didn't make the statement about brown-eyed and blue-eyed people, did I? I only played the sound for you. And now you know why CNN is going out of business, because they twist everything and they won't even report what's going on. I mean, how long can that department store dummy, Wolf Blitzer, get away with this kind of hack murder that he performs every day? This is the Savage Nation. San Francisco, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael, do I have you there?
Yes.
I just wanted to say thank you from the parent of an Oakland policeman. We have one of the youngest officers on the force, and we're deeply saddened and appalled by the media coverage of the scumbag that blew my son's comrades away. But a real heart.
Well, that's right. Your local once newspaper, which was a decent paper when I first came to town in 1974, has turned into nothing but a worthless rag. Nobody buys it anymore. It loses $1 million a day. What is the point of buying a paper that continues to do things like this?
There is no reason. And I basically damn the people that would cover these guys.
Well, they got rid of the laughing stock, Phil Bronstein. Even he, they had enough of him. They threw him out. Who writes for it? Nobody. Nobody of any note writes for the paper. There's no balanced coverage. There's nothing in it. Every day it's about Proposition 8 and homosexuals and the oppressed minority and the cops are bad and criminals are good. Thanks for the call. I'm getting a sore throat now. 1-800-449-8255. We can talk about any other. Can we move it around already? Now I'm starting to get upset. The food was great, by the way, Friday night at Alioto's. I got to tell you, when the cops said they wanted to take me to dinner, I never would let anyone pay for my dinner anyway. I don't. If people invite me to dinner and I go, I pay, even if I accept. But I got to tell you, the women were coming over. They wanted pictures with the cops in uniform, and people were sending bottles of wine over in the room to celebrate. It was an amazing thing to see. They wouldn't even take a meal from me. They'd already eaten. It was unbelievable. I ate. True enough, I ate, but it is the best veal in the city. I guarantee you the veal chop is not 90% fat. I'll be right back. Savage.
The pain being felt in places that rely on our auto industry is not the fault of our workers. They labor tirelessly and desperately want to see their companies succeed.
Yeah, right.
It's not
sure.
The fault of all the families and communities that supported manufacturing plants.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they're all Sterling. Yeah.
Rather, it's a failure of leadership.
Ah, get out of here. Again, it's attack the owner. It's classic Bolshevism. Don't glorify the worker. They're overpaid. Their benefits are beyond belief for a man who works on an assembly line. Have the unions been asked to cut back in any way, Mr. Obama? Have you asked the unions to scale back their grotesque benefits packages for their workers? Have you asked the unions to scale back their grotesque pensions for any of the workers, their obscene health care benefits, Mr. Obama? That is why these companies are going bankrupt. You compare them to Japanese-run companies right here in the United States, and you'll find out that the Japanese-run companies, which are not unionized, are able to produce a car for $3,000 per car less. Why? Precisely because they're not unionized. Precisely because the unions have bankrupted these companies. So when you hear this rubbish about the glorification of the worker and the communities are so wonderful, you know it's more rubbish. Again, this is the socialist playbook. Blame the owners, blame the boss, glorify the worker, all power to the people. I've heard all of this rubbish before. And again, my main point is this. Obama is now going to be running General Motors. Obama is saying he studied the Chrysler situation and they must merge with Fiat. A man who has never run a hot dog stand is now qualifying himself to determine that the Chrysler Corporation, which, by the way, built our tanks and our planes along with GM in World War II and has built and still builds some very fine cars, is now being managed by a community organizer from the wards of Chicago, who's telling him to merge in a shotgun marriage with Fiat. The Angeli family must be very happy indeed. Why does the Angeli family of Italy want the Chrysler Corporation? Well, I'll let you figure what reverse engineering could do for them. Florida, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, the nationalization that President Obama's doing with GM is, to me, is foreboding, because what it looks like it's pointing to is much like what the Nazis did with Wagen in the 30s. There's a bigger agenda here. It really points more to me that he's probably looking, a tie-in with Gore, with green power, and trying to force the American companies into that agenda. What that's for?
In other words, the car should run on biomass or banana peels. By the time he gets through with these companies, they won't even be producing an internal combustion engine.
I think it's a big payoff, and I would think Gore is somehow in on that.
Well, remember, there are trillions of dollars that are going to be made in these so-called green energy industries, which are a racket as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we all want a cleaner planet and all of that rubbish. But the fact of the matter is, trillions of dollars are going to be made on this crap because the Obama administration is going to let contracts worth billions of dollars every year to a bunch of gangsters who are running these green companies. Thanks for the call. You think I don't see it? But again, you get too far ahead of the curve here. I'm not having a good time today. I'm not focused. I'll be very honest with you. The shooting of the cops last week threw me off now for almost a week and a half. I have not been the same. I'm not sleeping well. I don't feel good. The vermin in the media making a moral equivalence between the crackhead who killed him and the cop. The whole thing's getting me a little off base here, and I haven't been the same. Now I wake up to the fact that this nincompoop Obama, who suddenly is – he looks stupid to me, by the way. When I see him, I actually see Alfred E. Newman. I don't know how people don't laugh at him. He's laughable. But what he's doing is not laughable. It's absolutely frightening. The man is an incompetent. At every level, you see his incompetence and his grandiose sense of self. At every level, you see his egomania, his narcissism, his megalomania. It's astounding to me that people take him seriously. The king has no clothing. The king has no brains. Sure, he may be clever enough to have used the white liberals to get where he is. Sure, he may be clever enough to have used the white communists to have gotten where he is. But this guy thinks that now he can run an automobile company? I don't think so. But why is he forcing Chrysler into a shotgun marriage with Fiat is the real question. That's the real question. You look into Fiat run by the Agnelli family, and it's one of many companies that the Agnellis of Italy run. And you realize also that the Fiat company is owned in very small ownership, only 2%, by the Libyans. But that is neither here nor there. Something's wrong with this picture. But again, I say, have the unions cut back on their obscene benefits and pay for the American automobile workers in these companies? Has this superb communist president of ours... And make no mistake about it, if Karl Marx himself had been elected to the presidency, he would not be conducting himself in any manner different from that of Barack Obama under these circumstances. He wouldn't try to do this by force initially. He would do it step by step, day by day, law by law, takeover by takeover, bailout by bailout, until eventually you don't even know that you don't own this country anymore. You're turning over too much power to this megalomania, this megalomaniac, Barack Obama. But have the unions been forced to cut back on their obscene benefits and their obscene pensions with the auto workers? Yes or no?
Savage.
The situation at Chrysler is more challenging. It's with deep reluctance, but also a clear-eyed recognition of the facts that we've determined after careful review that Chrysler needs a partner to remain viable.
Wait, that we've recently determined after careful review? A man who's never run a business? A man who never ran a spaghetti cart? Obama Motors from GM to OM in one fell swoop? So he's forcing a marriage upon Chrysler with Fiat. He's telling GM how to run their company. And he hasn't forced the unions to cut back on any of the benefits, including the grotesque health care benefits. I told you that the cost of making a car in America in a unionized factory is $3,000 more than the cost of making a car in an American factory owned by the Japanese that is not unionized. You take your choice as to figuring out why this is happening. And you'll come to understand that it's about socialized medicine, socialization of the economy, the takeover of business through the back door under the guise of saving them. They're controlling them. It is the demise of the free enterprise system, all conducted right in front of your eyes with a sleight of hand by this megalomaniac, Barack Hussein Obama, who we warned you about. Virginia Beach Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How are you? Mike, have you ever looked at the RICO, the actual law RICO, and what they put John Gotti in jail for, and looked at the
racketeering, influence, corrupt organization, three or more people conspiring to commit a crime as a RICO violation.
Look at that act, the federal law at RICO, and look at what's happened since the 90 days since he's been elected. And it's amazing that if you read that act and can see what's happening to this country right now, is that he's actually guilty of a RICO violation. Think about
Show me one RICO violation he's committed.
He's conspired with his administration since he's been elected to steal. There's been a racketeering influence in his whole administration to steal from the American people. Think about it, Michael. You know, everybody, I've listened to you for so long, and I remember the days. I'm a Brooklyn boy. I'm a military man, too. But think about it. Read the RICO Act, the way they put mobsters away, and think about what he's done to this country, and he is in violation of the RICO Act. If you read it.
Well, but you see that the RICO Act's clever how it's written, for personal gain. Obama's not having personal gain. It's third parties are going to have personal gain.
There's still part of the RICO Act. I read it last night, and I was listening to you last week, and we're talking conspiracy. And if you read the RICO Act, is that...
I don't think it's a conspiracy. This is an open conspiracy. You've got guys like George Soros, who spent $30 million to defeat George Bush and didn't win. He now owns the president in one way or another. You got other nefarious sources out there who put him in power. There's no other explanation for how an unknown man like this could become president other than they raised almost $1 trillion and hoodwinked America into voting for him. And so now they're getting paid back. What do you think this is all about? This is an open conspiracy.
Well, I agree with that. And you know what, Mike? I can hear the
passion. The only thing that can save us, the only thing that can save this country are the Democrats. Now, that's a strange statement, is it not?
That's a great statement. It is.
That's right. And Michael Savage said it first. It will be used tomorrow by the wall banger, the crybaby with hemorrhoids, or the golfer. But let's put that aside. Only the Democrats can save America from this socialist megalomaniac and his minions. Why do I say it? Because the Republicans have become a defunct organization. Sure, they oppose him, but they're powerless. So they know it means nothing. They lose nothing by opposing him. It is only the centrist Democrats who will be thrown out on the ears in the next election unless they rein this lunatic in who can stop him right now. And believe me, there were many so-called blue dog Democrats who were conservative Democrats from the Midwest primarily, who were reluctant to go along with the far-left policies of this union or the street organizer, Barack. Now, Barry is out of control. Barry is on his way to Europe. Barry's flying off to Europe where he's going to meet a lot of resistance from more sober, experienced politicians. For example, Angela Merkel in Germany, herself a centrist, if you want to put her in that category. I think you would have to define her as that. She has said, no, we're not going to spend any more money. We're not joining the Global New Deal. She said that over the weekend. In other words, even she's not willing to be dragged into the far-left politics of Obama. Now, she's pushed by her far-left Red Brigades types in Germany to move in that direction, but she won't do it. So she is what would be here a centrist Democrat. But I don't see the centrist Democrat standing up to this megalomaniac and saying, no, we're not, hell no, we won't go. Do you see any of them doing it? Well, yes and no. Even Harry Reid himself, a very, very, very hard to pin down politician who's losing favor in his own state and could easily be defeated by a viable Republican candidate in Nevada, in my opinion. Even Harry Reid has said to the far left minions of Obama, leave us the heck alone. Stop telling the Democrat Party how to behave. Do you understand that? So as I say, and I'll repeat it again, only the Democrats can save America. Will they do it? God only knows. Steve in Chicago, welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Savage, the workers at Fiat are also highly paid with huge benefits. The only reason this makes sense is because the workers at Fiat are known to be a trade unionists who are communists. So
I get it. So in other words, if Fiat comes here, they'll bring their communist playbook into the Chrysler organization.
Obama will throw the American worker under the bus and advance the international trade union movement, yes.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Something didn't make sense to me. But do you know anybody who drives a Fiat, by the way?
No. I
remember they were big in the 70s. They produced it was Alfa that produced a nice car. But by that point, Fiat was already a laughingstock. It was known as a Fix-It-Again Tony, remember?
Yeah. That's...
What did you guys call Fiats in Chicago in the 70s? Was there a translation for the acronym?
Not that I know of.
No. I mean, I only heard Fix It Again Tony from a musician friend. I don't know anybody who drives a Fiat. I remember in the 50s they were around little cars with bumper stickers that used to say Fiat running in. I had no idea what it was. It justified because they were going slowly on the roads. So it said Fiat running in. They were only supposed to be run slowly when they were running in, meaning breaking in. They didn't even translate it properly. Fiat running in. I didn't know what it was. We looked at them like they were clown cars. But that's neither here nor there. But that explains partially why he's so anxious to force a shotgun marriage on Chrysler, that they can bring the entire communist unionized mentality here to America and be done with it. That's all. Dennis in San Diego, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, granted, the bailout of Chrysler and GM is a surrealistic nightmare that's unfolding before our very eyes. But there is a silver lining here. The silver lining here is what CEO and board of directors of a different company in a different sector is going to take any bailout money. They'll lose their jobs. They'll lose their golden parachute. They'll be vilified. So this could be the end of it. This could be the end of the bailout.
Okay, wait. I missed something. What could be? How could it be the end of it? If the government's taking over Chrysler and GM with our money, who's benefiting here? Have the unions cut back on their grotesque benefits and pension plans to the workers?
Absolutely not. But other industries like the aerospace industry, other industries that have not yet folded, will not want any bailout money. Because they will look at the
Why not? You're saying because once they see what strings are attached and that he's trying to take over their companies, they won't let him go near them.
Right. This could be the end of it.
I see. Well, I don't know that that's such good news either, in the sense that, remember, GM and Chrysler in World War II, I keep repeating, made our tanks, our jeeps, and our military vehicles. Do you really want one of them to be in the hands of a foreign-controlled and communist-organized company at that? I don't think so. No, not me. Las Vegas, Leonard, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I read a couple of years ago in a book called, I think it was the Pax Mafia, goes into detail of the Russian and Italian mafias. And it goes into detail over there regarding Fiat being owned, plus minus about 30% by the Italian mafia.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. Oh, no. Come on. You're making this up.
No, I read in the book. And the Fiat that people can look up on the internet is called a Fiat Uno. In South Africa, they have a ton of them, and they're so small. Tiny little cars.
Isn't that nice? Oh, my God. When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, I guess that's amore, huh? Hey, you know my statement is, watch out for the Goomba in the gumbo.
There you go. All
right, Michael. That's as close as I'm going to get to this story, which is watch out for the Goomba in the gumbo. That's as close as I'm going to get to this one. Well, what the heck? We can't comment on that, right? It is a little bit like the sporting goods store in The Sopranos, is that once a certain group gets their fingers into a certain kind of business, the next thing you know, the business is emptied out and it's bankrupt. But hey, what the heck? You got a megalomaniac who knows how to talk, and the orgasmic girls and the pothead boys loved him, so what more do you want? What more do you need? The children of America, the potheads, the red diaper dopa babies elected him because they know how to twitter. As long as they know how to twitter, everything will be good. They don't know how to make put a nail in a board. They couldn't. If you gave an average twitterer a saw and a board, and you said to the twitterer, I want you to saw that board, either he'd break in tears or cut off his finger. If you gave an average twitterer a hammer and a nail and two pieces of wood and said that you have to make these two pieces of wood line up with a couple of nails, they'd probably cry for their mommies. But they can twitter, and they know how to go online, and they know how to text. If you gave an average text messenger at NYU a pipe wrench, some pipe tape, and you said to him, your bathroom sink is clogged up, I want you to remove the U-joint under the sink in your dorm, he'd probably cry for a Valium and have to go see the school psychiatrist. But he can text message, he can Twitter, and more importantly, he can vote for the incredibly telegenic, the incredible, magnificent Obama. That's what's important. Cincinnati Paul, welcome. Nah, not welcome. I don't want to call her right now. I need music as a breaker because I want to talk a little more before taking a break. How about giving me some Friday music on Monday? What do we got waiting for the play? I need a breaker. Something.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring,
ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ding-a-ling-along, ding-a-ling-a-ling, running America. Thanks for the call. I mean, thanks for the song. Dino, the Dino. The Dino Ferrari was quite a car in its day. The Dino, the Dino. The Dino. I used to love the name of it. That time I couldn't even afford to use the Pontiac, 10 years old. Dino. Isn't life weird that when you can finally afford something, you don't want it? It's the craziest thing on earth. You reach a point where you can afford something, you don't want it anymore. When you wanted it, you couldn't. It's the same with everything on earth. I told you the story last week. Just as a lightener. The story is about the Italian peasant who comes to America and he drinks homemade wine. And he crushes it down in the cellar, and the wife and the daughter, and they make the wine. He drinks the homemade wine. He loves it. Then as he gets a little more money, he becomes more sophisticated. He buys the $10 bottle, then the $20 bottle. Now he's buying the $500 bottle, then the $1,000. And then eventually he becomes an old man again, and all the pomp and circumstances put aside, and no one is around him anymore, and he's back home, and he has made all the money he ever wanted to make, and he doesn't want to make any more fame or noise anymore. You know what he likes to drink? The homemade wine that he drank when he was a kid. I'll be right back. Savage.
Let me be clear. The United States government has no interest in running GM. We have no intention of running GM. What we are interested in is giving GM an opportunity to finally make those much-needed changes that will let them emerge.
Why don't you force the unions to make some changes, Grand Leader? Now, let me explain something to you. Since this man has come to power, he's engineered the takeovers of banks, and he's installed a new CEO at AIG. There's a historical model that we got to look at. Past presidents have conducted a forced showdown with major industries with somewhat mixed results. For example, Harry Truman decided to nationalize the steel industry on the eve of a strike in 1952. So it didn't, in other words, this has happened before. Guess what? Truman's decision to nationalize the steel industry when steel workers were about to go on strike in 1952 was taken to the Supreme Court and ruled unconstitutional. So will somebody dare take one of these cases to the ultimate authority out of the hands of this interloper? I don't know. Why is he acting as though he's a dictator and as though he's a Mussolini already with no Supreme Court? Maybe somebody can sue and say, no, you can't force Chrysler to merge with Fiat. But then again, you have to understand Chrysler is owned by an investment bank, a conglomerate that is made up of several small investment banks, relatively smaller investment banks, and they're the ones who want to have the shotgun marriage with Fiat. So this is very complicated. Follow the money. Watch Godfather 3. You know, and maybe you could figure it out. Michael with the collapse, Michael Corleone with the low blood sugar. Because I can't figure it out. I know there's something wrong here. I know there's something wrong with the government taking over automobile companies and not forcing the unions to reduce some of the demands for benefits. Sergio Marchionne, CEO of Fiat, issued a statement calling the Obama administration's involvement, quote, tough but fair. And we believe we will arrive at a result that will establish a credible future for this critical, crucial... it's a nonsense written by some girl from Brown University. Some girl who Brown knows the way into the job. Fiat executives have talked to administration officials about a proposal to acquire a 35% stake in Chrysler in exchange for, listen to this, small car technology, transmissions, and other items that Chrysler has valued at $8 to $10 billion. You're telling me the Chrysler needs the Fiat transmission? Yeah, that's news to me. I didn't know that Fiat was known for any technology. Can anyone explain to me what technology Fiat has generated? I don't know of one. I'd like to know why the United Auto Workers Union has not been asked to compromise in some way. What kind of double standard is this? Why is there no discussion of the fact that the gargantuan benefits of the workers negotiated by the UAW makes each American-made car cost $3,000 more than its foreign counterpart? Why? Now, notice Ford Motor Company, the third member of the Big Three, has not requested federal bailout funds to their credit. That's very interesting, isn't it? Nevertheless, fears about Obama's nationalizing the auto industry sent stocks plummeting, with the Dow Jones losing 254 points. GM dropped 25%. Chrysler, as you know, is not publicly traded. So there it is. Now, Obama's remarks were prompted by the expiration of a temporary bailout approved by the Bush administration last winter. Bush gave them $17 billion to help GM and Chrysler survive, and now they're coming back for another double dip. And so far as we know, they haven't cut back on any expenses yet. So you could argue that we should let them fail. I've argued we should not let them fail. I've argued that we shouldn't let GM and Chrysler fail. I said that over a year ago. Why? We need them. We need them. We need them. Never mind the jobs. We need them because we need to have an infrastructure to produce military equipment. I'm very pragmatic when it comes to things like this. But if you're going to have a company that's bankrupt, in essence, and save it, you've got to compromise all around. You want government money? Okay, then maybe we should give it some government money. But you got to cut back on the cost of building the car. These grotesque healthcare benefits have destroyed these companies. Look, all you hear about is healthcare. Every creep in America wants 5 to 10 visits a month to a doctor for free. They all want 5 to 10 pills a month for nothing. We can't afford it. And they're working hand in glove with the pharmaceutical giants. You know that, and the big HMOs. They're all involved with this together. We are the most over-medicated, over-doctored people on planet Earth. My mother didn't go to a doctor every day to see somebody for free. It was expensive to go to a doctor. So if she had grief or she had pain, she didn't go to a doctor. She just dealt with it. She lived with it. My father worked 7 days a week, never took a vacation, in the summer a few days. All right? That's the way things were in those days. They didn't run to a doctor for every creak and every groan and every medication. Again, we're the most over-medicated, over-doctored people on planet Earth. We're a nation of crippled imbeciles. We don't need all these drugs. We don't need all these doctors. It's all bankrupting America.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. The monologue is really important. The vultures at the Oakland police funeral. Here are politicians who have dedicated their entire careers in the form of Boxer, Feinstein, Ron Dellums, to fighting police, controlling police, making police second-class citizens, who dare go to the funeral of four officers shot in cold blood by a street vermin in Oakland, California. These are the people who killed the cops. They may as well have pulled the trigger, as you will have learned on my show today. On the left side, from John Lilpop, California should celebrate March 31st as Michael Savage Day. Yes, that's right, Michael Savage Day. Did you hear about that one? Did you hear about that one? He writes, California is world-renowned for goofy politics and politicians. Leftist lunacy and craziness. That insanity obviously spills over to the manner by which priorities are established in the Golden State. For example, radio superstar Dr. Michael Savage holds a nationally syndicated radio talk show from San Francisco that's carried by about 400 stations, reaches 10 million listeners a week, and is one of the last vestiges of hope for free speech. Yet Dr. Savage is unknown in the local area. He says, with credentials like this, one would expect California to be rightfully proud of this favorite son, perhaps even set aside a day to commemorate the contributions made by this talented man. He said, what is that you say? March 31 is already a state holiday in California to commemorate the birthday of the late Cesar Chavez? Can you imagine, he writes, a brilliant author, educator, radio broadcaster, and advocate for America is all but ignored while the entire state shuts down to remember the birthday of a grape picker, union organizer, only in California. From Fox News on MichaelSavage.com, our defense secretary says the U.S. is not prepared to respond to North Korea. A shocker. With all the trillions they've gotten, they can't respond? From the New York Post, Senator Dodd's cavalcade of scandal. Well, as you well know, Chris Dodd has it in his DNA, because Daddy Dodd left the Senate in disgrace. I guess the corned beef doesn't fall far from the tree. It's time for something lighter. Joining us now is James Herson with his report on what's going on in Hollywood.
Thanks, Michael. This is just what we needed. A movie that will likely be jointly produced by HBO and the BBC is titled The Special Relationship. It'll take us back to the good old days when our TVs were filled with the sleazy saga of Bill Clinton's so-called inappropriate relationship with Monica Lewinsky. But the name special relationship, it doesn't apply to Lewinsky and Clinton. It refers to the political relationship between Bill Clinton and Tony Blair.
This is unbelievable to me.
Dennis Quaid will play Bubba and Julianne Moore Hillary. And as a hint of how the story will be told, it'll be written and directed by the same guy who wrote Frost Nixon, Peter Morgan. So why can't Hollywood get some more current script ideas?
What did you have in mind?
Well, how about this one? The story of a guy who worked at Freddie Mac. You know, that place that had an accounting scandal that led to a management shakeup and huge fines contributing to the decline of our financial system? Well, there was this guy who was on the board of Freddie Mac. He took in more than $300,000 for the gig, and his name is familiar. You know, Rahm Emanuel, now chief of staff to President Barack Obama. Now that's ironic. Oh, so is another film that's coming to a multiplex near you, Michael.
A movie about The Sopranos? I'd love it.
Not The Sopranos movie, unfortunately, no. It's the 21st century version of The Three Stooges. Yuck, yuck. And guess who's going to play Larry? Sean Penn.
Oh, my God.
And Benicio del Toro is going to play Mo. Two real-life Stooges for Hugo Chavez. Jim Carrey's going to shave his head and play Curly, and I guess you could call Penn and Del Toro being cast as Stooges comedic justice. In Hollywood, there's another kind of justice, celebrity justice. That's when there's enough evidence to arrest a guy for beating his girlfriend almost to death, but he ends up spending no time in jail and 6 weeks later has not even been arraigned. Yeah, Chris Brown allegedly punched, choked, and bit Rihanna back on February 8th, and this guy was arrested, but he's still not been arraigned. I mean, he should be rotting in jail awaiting a trial, but instead he's been out traveling to various resorts and partying. Typical Hollywood.
They'll never learn.
But a new movie from Hollywood is actually kind of different. Not typical. Now, movies about haunted houses are as much a tradition as scary stories are to childhood sleepovers, but in this latest spooky flick, The Haunting in Connecticut, that's just about to open, Virginia Madsen, you know, the actress that was in Sideways, plays a woman named Sarah Campbell, a beleaguered mom dealing with great difficulty. You see, her son, Matt, has been diagnosed with cancer, and the disease is slowly taking his life, and her husband's a recovering alcoholic. And as the audience quickly finds out, Sarah picked the wrong piece of real estate. She rents a somewhat run-down home, and despite that it's a bit creepy, it needs some fixing, it's priced right, and more importantly, it's located right near the medical facility where her son is receiving experimental cancer treatment. Now, very soon after moving into the home, the son, Matt, begins to see some really ghostly, freaky stuff. But he's the only one who sees it. Now, the family encounters a pastor who perceives the evil, warns the family, but get this, he too is suffering from cancer. So the son, Matt, begins to believe that his experiences are not hallucinations, but rather he is able to see and hear those who are in the spirit world because his condition places him closer to death. It turns out the origin of the manifestations in the house is linked to ghastly stuff that occurred in the 1920s when this home was used as a funeral parlor. And what really pushes The Haunting in Connecticut high above the average Hollywood horror movie is that the film takes place in a world where there's incredible evil, there's overwhelming goodness. It's a place where hopelessness and hope are side by side, and where the better angel ultimately takes the lead, and more importantly, where the lamp of faith chases away the darkness. And we need that. Well, Michael, that's the latest from my Hollywood bunker. Thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. Here's what I've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. The media forgets the Oakland police assassinations. Only a few days have gone by since the funerals for the Oakland police officers who were executed in cold blood on the streets. But already the left-wing media has forgotten that it ever happened and wants you to forget it as well. Is the media's hatred of the police, of the church, of the military, and all of the other institutions that make America what it is, the reason why far-left outlets like CNN and the San Francisco Chronicle have failed and are about to be disappeared? Second topic was all the gold in Fort Knox. A congressman is demanding to know what the government has done with the gold in Fort Knox. Apparently, no audit has been made since the Eisenhower administration. Some investors think the government may have used it in international swap agreements. Will the open Obama administration tell us if the gold is actually there? How could it have come to pass that the chosen voice of the powers that be, created by Ted the Looney Turner, has come to this sorry state? Is it because of this host? Because of that time slot? Or that advertiser? Or this news cycle? All of these discussions seem to be missing the point. CNN, because of its far-left editorial positions, has now painted itself into a corner. Most Americans are conservative and don't want liberal stories shoved down their throats 24/7. And Fox News, for as much as it has been eviscerated by the moral standards of Rupert Murdoch, as much as it's become the channel of choice for Hollywood sluts throwing up on their shoes, as much as it's become the voice for check pants Republicans across the nation, it is still the most conservative of the cable news outlets, and that is why it continues to succeed. Good luck to it. That's why leftist newspapers are failing, and conservative talk radio is booming. America wants to be led to the right. The American public, especially in the wake of being duped by Barack Obama, has become all too aware of the lies of the left, and it's turning to any source that will provide them with the truth, or even a modicum of it. The newspapers are dying, once considered great sources of news. They're now falling due to slanted news coverage and the availability of these stories on the Internet. Joining us today is Paul Mulshine from the Star-Ledger, who says the newspapers aren't quite done yet and is here to tell us why.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again. Our newspaper, like every other newspaper, has been challenged by the Internet. And I think there's this perception out there that we'll have this seamless transfer where all the news operation was going to go on the Internet, and it's going to be just wonderful, and you'll have all these citizen journalists out there, and it's just going to be perfect. The problem with that is if you go to any of these websites, what they're really doing is creating the idea that they're doing all this reporting, when in reality they're all parasitical on, you know, the good old-fashioned dead tree journalists, and the dead tree journalists are the ones running out and actually going to the places and doing the reporting. And not just, you know, war zones and all that, but the state legislature, boards of education, committee meetings, political functions, things that, you know, the myth is that eventually the Internet media will all be out there and they'll be covering this stuff and the mainstream media will disappear. Well, in fact, people aren't going to do this for free because it's, you know, it's pretty boring. So we really are the one, you got to pay somebody to do it. And the people getting paid right now are, you know, the old time newspaper people.
How do people think the stories will still get onto the Internet?
Kind of model for what everyone thinks is going to happen is that all our ads will just go online and we'll still be putting hundreds of reporters out there. But, for example, the other day the Seattle Post-Intelligencer went online and they had 165 journalists. They're now going down to 20. Which really makes them a blog and not a newspaper. With 20, you're not going to be going out to the local police. You're not going to be going out to the local board of ed. You're not going to be going to the municipal council meeting. You're going to be sitting back and commenting on what other people are doing. Maybe making a couple phone calls, which is good. But it's not the real kind of research that we've come to expect. The big mistake I think we made in the newspaper world, and I was on this in the beginning, back in the late 90s, our newspaper, the Star-Ledger, which is the leading New Jersey newspaper, we bought into this, and we started this big web presence, and we were going to have the magic of the Internet and tons of employees and so forth. And the problem there is it didn't work out the way you would think because the advertisers, other than like car ads, help wanted ads, they don't go that well on the Internet. Fortunately, I think this is what's going to be at least a minor savior for print journalism. I think we're going to see there's going to be a lot of the a lot of people are going to go, still have to get people into the local stores, you know, the local Target and so forth. If they want to get people in the door, they're going to have to advertise in the newspaper. And this will have the effect of at least keeping some journalists in employment. Unfortunately, it's difficult to keep the numbers that there once were.
You say stories on the Internet don't affect politicians the same way it does in print?
It doesn't scare the politicians the way words in print scare politicians. And that, there's something about it where they see it in print and it really makes them look at themselves. You know, they really look at these things and they really say, wow, I'm embarrassed. These guys are making fun of me. Maybe I better change my ways.
We're speaking with Paul Mulshein about the state of the newspapers. Paul, what is your opinion on the possible newspaper bailout?
To me, it looked untenable. I mean, I think they were saying they were going to set up as nonprofits and they're getting rid of the antitrust law. There was antitrust law that said newspapers couldn't join with other newspapers, couldn't join with radio stations, couldn't join with TV stations. And, you know, now that the newspapers are at death's door, it's not, you know, it's not as though they're going to dominate the market. So I think that would be, you know, more tenable. What I really fear you're going to see is, and this is a real serious problem, is as newspapers start to falter, I think what you're going to see is a lot of these sharp political types are going to buy newspapers and turn them into partisan rags.
Well, where does it go from here?
I think the future, unfortunately, of journalism is going to be smart people who used to work for newspapers, you know, will be hired. You get that spin out there. And now we're going to be getting the spin on the Obama side. And people are very susceptible to that spin. Those guys are very sharp. It's difficult without people actually digging into budgets, digging into facts, coming up with ways of debunking his programs. You're really not going to be able to counter this stuff. You know, there's not a model yet on the internet for people to go out and start doing this stuff. I mean, internet sites have 3 employees, 4 employees, 5 employees. They don't have guys who have, you know, like I have 2 days to, you know, 2 days to study something before I write about it. Access to all the major public officials who will return my calls because I work for a newspaper. You know, it really gives me an opportunity to look at things in a way that the average blogger can't do it. And, you know, that's really unfortunate. That's the kind of thing we're going to be losing. So, you know, I don't see. What I do see is watch out for what comes up in its stead, which is going to be a whole lot of these either Republican or Democratic created pseudo newspapers, which will bring us back to the early days, of course, the early days of the country. You know, that was a very common thing. Towns had a newspaper called the Democrat or the Whig or something like that, which was blatantly biased. And you're going to see that sort of thing occur a lot more.
That's exactly why more and more people turn to talk radio. Paul, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I've told you about the politicians at the Oakland Police Memorial for the 4 assassinated officers, how these pals sat there with solemn faces and spoke highly of the murdered police while having their blood on their hands. Blood that they got by shackling these men so they got shot instead of being able to do their jobs. They shackled them by telling them not to draw their guns when approaching a stopped car. That's why they were killed. Well, in the 48 hours after the funeral for these men, the media was doing everything it could to turn the degenerate murderer into a victim. For example, here's what came out over the weekend. The LA Times said this. In the neighborhood where 4 Oakland police officers were killed last weekend, a large makeshift memorial still adorns a sidewalk with flowers, notes, and photographs of the slain police. Across the street lies another smaller sidewalk memorial, this one for the parolee who killed the officers. Puke. SF Gate. The online version of the failing SF Chronicle carried this tidbit in an editorial about the killings. This will, of course, create greater distrust of police within the community, said the vermin at the SF Gate. The SalaciousSalon.com carried praise of the leftists with blood on their hands who eulogized the police. They said the speeches by the assembled politicians were suitable, dignified, and moving. Yes, for scum like you. And the AP carried this in a story which covered for the neo-Marxists who are responsible for this gutter rat. California's Inspector General says the parolee who allegedly killed 4 Oakland police officers was properly monitored by corrections officials after his release from prison. Yeah, sure, like a hive of bees is monitored by a beekeeper. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. Play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, plan to sleep all day.
On to other topics. It looks like CNN, which for years I have called the Crescent News Network, has fallen in the cable news ratings to third place behind Fox News and MSLGBT. The empty suits and empty skirts of the midstream media are desperately trying to figure all of this out. How could it be that the favorite leftist network of the establishment has fallen so far? Why is Fox beating CNN in the ratings? Is it because they have better hosts, or is it just because Americans do not want to listen to any more left-wing bias from the Crescent News Network? The Obama administration seems to have plans for just about everything: how we drive our cars, live our lives, and even raise our children. Where are the complaints about people making plans for other people's lives? Letting other people make your decisions always ends badly in socialism and totalitarianism. Joining us right now is Dr. Peter Breggin to talk about the arrogance of people who make these plans and the folly of those who follow.
Thanks, Michael. Today's subject is the arrogance of men who make plans and the corresponding folly of people who go along with them. As I listen to government officials like Tim Geithner and Ben Bernanke, as well as President Obama, telling us about their plans for our lives, it reminds me how little the most basic questions are being addressed. We have forgotten that America was built on the premise that no one has the right to plan anyone else's life. And we have forgotten the most fundamental principle of the free market, that markets work best by allowing unlimited numbers of people to make plans for themselves. From a psychological viewpoint, this is a very grown-up idea, this notion that I don't know what's best for you, and you must be allowed to plan your own life. Ask any toddler, and if he could explain himself, the little tyke would tell you that he knows exactly how the world should be run, around his every whim. He doesn't know, and he doesn't care, that millions of people have their own ideas about how to live. And it doesn't end with toddlerhood. Who doesn't remember being an adolescent who knew just how the world should be run and knew it better than his own family, the teachers, and probably everyone in the world? The adolescent's political world is drunk with idealism, and nearly every adolescent is a progressive stumbling around intoxicated with his own well-meaning fantasies of how to do good. And if he can't grow up to run the world, then he wants well-meaning people like himself to do it. During the debates leading up to the ratification of the Constitution of this great land of ours, George Mason warned that a powerful presidency would become a danger to the republic and to individual rights. He said we didn't need a strong presidency, one that was able to establish precedents for making strong decisions and taking big actions during crises. Instead, he found America's strength in, and I quote here, the love, the affection, the attachment of the citizens to their laws, to their freedom, and to their country. Modern politics, by contrast, is permeated and even captured by the idea of powerful leaders making plans. As soon as Congress and President Bush were told that the country was heading for a bad tumble, they panicked and shamelessly begged the know-it-alls to take over. Never mind that the planners themselves had brought about the problem. Let them make plans. Never mind that millions of free and independent people making their own choices would soon lead us out of the mess we're in. Plans must be made. A mere few hundred years of a relatively free market have shown that millions of people pursuing their own self-interest will work with each other and cooperate in ways that benefit the world in previously unimagined fashions. The overall combination of each of us making our own plans for ourselves creates untold numbers of innovations and enormous wealth, and remains today the only way to get the economy rolling again.
What about the greed that seems to be in abundance in Congress and big corps?
If too many people are dishonest and fail to keep contracts, capitalism does quickly deteriorate into a dog-eat-dog feast of the few on the many. Adam Smith was first and foremost a philosopher of morality, and he believed that fellow feeling, concern for each other was required to make the free market work. From government regulation to the legal system, there are a variety of stopgap measures for keeping the market honest, but none of them can do the job. We need a nation where people value ethics and strive to be honest, and where citizens maintain their concern for each other. The teaching of ethics and the honoring of the founding principles must be taught in the churches and temples, at home and in school, and in the media. Without this, we are doomed. The nation requires a moral revival more than it requires an economic one.
Why can't somebody help us plan through these miserable times?
To begin with, no one's that smart. The economy is far too complex. If no one in power saw the current economic crisis coming, then how can we expect them to figure out how to get us out? Not only is our economy far too complex for any person or committee to figure it out, in principle it cannot be run successfully from above. Central planning violates a basic principle of human energy, that people work the hardest and the most effectively when making their own decisions instead of fitting themselves into other people's plans. So even if by chance, sort of like a million monkeys trying to type out the Gettysburg Address by chance, even if by chance the brainless heads of our government officials could churn up a good plan, it still could not work. It could not work because it would be imposed from above and people wouldn't participate energetically. Human energy can only be fully harnessed when there is no harness, when people are free to work out their own individual problems and interests. An economy cannot be mashed into shape from above like silly putty. It has to percolate from below, from the hard work of individual persons and enterprises. Government planners need to back off. This is not the time to act out the fantasies of children and adolescents. Grown-ups should know that they cannot plan the world for other people. Individuals making choices have made America great, not the self-styled idealist know-it-alls who are making plans for us right now. Grow up and let America get back to work, making this the great nation that it is. And that brings me to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. This is Dr. Peter Bregan urging you to live like an American. You can find me and listen to me and all these reports at Bregan.com. That's Bregin.com.
Thanks, Dr. Bregan. Unfortunately, many people think that Obama is treating the American people just like the children they seem to be. I'll be back.
Savage.
Fox News beating CNN in the ratings. Do you feel alienated? Do you feel that both parties have left you? Of course you do. That explains the phenomenal growth of the Savage Nation during downtimes. That explains the demise of the newspapers. That explains so many things that you don't read in the newspapers. And now I will explain some things that you don't read or hear anywhere else. What happened to the Oakland cops? How did it happen that one filthy dirtbag subhuman, glorified by the local media, is made the moral equivalent of the four police that he executed? How did this happen? Why were they killed? I will start by telling you what happened to me at the end of the show on Friday. As you know, I had a very emotional day on this program, playing many of the sound bites from the funeral of the four executed officers in Oakland, California. It was largely a national story, not just a local story, and it should be remembered. You'll notice one homosexual was brutalized several years ago, and there have been plays written about him, and the media won't let it go. Four cops are executed in a single day by one filthy dirtbag because of liberal politicians, and they have swept the murders under the rug. The reason I'm focusing on it is I don't want this to ever happen again. And I'm going to tell you more about it as the day wears on, because I think I have the inside story of what actually happened. But let me start with Friday. I got off the air. I was, frankly, revved up, as I haven't been in many years, with rage, with anger, with sadness, and I was alone. And I said to myself, where are my cop friends? Where are they? Why am I alone? Why have I not been invited? The phone rings, a friend of mine calls and says, Michael, there are four cops out from New York, four NYPD, who would like to take you to dinner. And I never go to dinner with people I don't know, never. As much as I would like to sometimes, I just don't do it. I called him back and I said, sure, okay, fine. Well, I said, I'll tell you what, have them meet me at Alioto's on Fisherman's Wharf because I know it's the best, first of all, the best food around. Secondly, we can get a private room. And so he called Richie Alioto. Richie, of course, gave us the calamari room. And I get there at 8 o'clock. There's three SFPD, four NYPD, an Army colonel up for the Medal of Honor, another Army colonel. And, you know, we started to eat and started to talk. Well, let me finish by saying I proudly have in my hand an NYPD police patch, which I have mounted on the wall. I have an SFPD shirt and cap given to me by the officers who gave me the shirt off their back, veritably. And as we talked, I came to realize what I've always known to be true. It's not just the police who listen to this show. I can tell you by the number of lights that went on the highways when I told you to put your lights on Friday in memory of the four officers executed by the subhuman in Oakland. Forget what the media tells you. Forget what the newspapers would have you believe. It's brainwashing. We are the majority. We actually represent the majority sentiment of America. And so I want to go back now to what really happened to the Oakland cops. Let me summarize it in my own words. I've got several different accounts from people I've talked to, my own sources. Nothing that you've heard so far is the truth. The subhuman did not pop up out of the sunroof, as I had been led to believe. That is not what happened. Because of Mayor Ron Dellums, because of Barbara Boxer, because of Dianne Feinstein, because of Barbara Lee, because of the liberal mental disorder, because of the police watch groups, when the cops caught this dirtbag driving by in his old Buick, and they knew he was wanted not only for parole violation, but also for a rape of a 12-year-old, they signaled for him to pull over. But because the cops of Oakland had been intimidated by the filthy vermin in the ACLU and the politicians I have just mentioned, they approached the subhuman without their guns drawn. That was the end of their life. In an ordinary traffic stop with a noted felon, the cops will come with their guns drawn and prepare to shoot. But because of the very people on that stage, the cops were told not to intimidate the people of Oakland. Don't make the community nervous. Don't make them feel like second-class citizens. So walk up like loving police officers, like peace officers, rather, and ask the gentleman in the Buick if he might give you his driver's license. Well, a gentleman in the car was apparently ready to kill, and kill he did. He shot one immediately in the neck and then chased the other officer down the street as though he were a mad dog. The other officer did not even have time to pull his weapon. He then shot the second officer behind the head like a Nazi, shot him in the back of the neck, and then proceeded to shoot each cop one more time in the head. That's what the media has been glorifying. That's what the filth in the media have been holding up as moral equivalent to the dead officers. Well, let me tell you something. The reason papers are going bankrupt is not solely because advertising has gone to the internet. No, my friends, not at all. In memory of Sergeant Mark Dunnikin, Officer John Heggie, Sergeant Irvin Romans, Sergeant Daniel Sakai. Yeah, in memory of them, we have the show today. Sergeant Mark Dunnikin left three children, ages 15, 13, and 8, and a loving wife. Officer John Heggie, Sergeant Irvin Romans left six children and his wife. Sergeant Daniel Sakai leaves a lovely wife and a four-year-old daughter. And yet the vermin in the media make the subhuman who killed them the moral equivalent. And you wonder how Obama became president? You wonder why so many millions were brainwashed, hoodwinked, propagandized into believing that Barack Obama was qualified to be the president of the United States of America when he was only a junior senator from some godforsaken Chicago war district put in power by some money changers in the temple of this republic? And that's why we are here today on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is fair game, but I'd rather focus on this for the moment. There's an interesting article on my website by John Lilpop saying California should celebrate March 31 as Dr. Michael Savage Day. What? Me? Yep, that's what he says. He's a fine writer. And here's how he ends his article. He says, why not designate March 31 as Michael Savage Day throughout the length and breadth of our great state? Close the schools, shut down the state and local bureaucracies, and dedicate the entire day to celebrating the birth and life of Dr. Michael Savage's. Michael Savage. What is that you say? March 31 is already a state holiday in California to commemorate the birthday of the late Cesar Chavez? Can you imagine? A brilliant author, educator, radio broadcaster, and advocate for America is all but ignored while the entire state shuts down to remember the birthday of a grape picker and union organizer, only in California. He then goes on to say that Michael Savage is heard on over 400 stations, reaches 10 million listeners a week, and holds two master's degrees and a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. Savage has authored 24 books, including four New York Times bestsellers. Savage is a staunch defender of Americans and America's sovereignty, the rule of law, the preservation of American borders, language, and culture. He says, with these credentials to his credit, one would expect California to be rightfully proud of this favorite son. Oh, sure. Which California? There's no California anymore. Get it? Video scandal, Biden's daughter on drugs? Question mark? From the New York Post? What? Farms in Berkeley? From the New York Times, Pelosi's approval ratings have taken a horrible nosedive, according to Rasmussen reports. I'm really shocked by that one. And by the way, if you do want to contribute to the fallen officers, the families, the children who have no fathers, I've linked up their, people have called me, individual checks made out to families are mailed to, and there's a name. Checks can be made out to three different trusts. One officer was not married, so there is no trust fund for the family. And that's why when I said that I gave $20,000 last week, $10,000 on Monday and $10,000 on Friday, I thought it was in the denominations of $2,500 for each of four, but it was given out in $3,300 and divided times three, okay, twice. That's how I did it. And so that's why there's three trust funds, not four, Dunnigan, Romans, and Sakai Family Trust. And it shows you how to make the checks out or who to mail it to. You got to go to michaelsavage.com.
Savage.